The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, with the world population set to hit 8 billion today, it's a projection. We don't know whether the 8th billionth person has already been born or still to be born, but it'll happen around now. What does it mean for our planet? Well, we're joined now by environmental journalist John Gibbons and by founder of Shamrock Spring, eco-enabler and collaborator Deirdre Lane. Good morning and welcome to you both. John, first of all, you know, is it a question of simple numbers or is it about the way we live?
Good morning, Pat. It's definitely a little bit of both. I mean, there's no question. We're at the highest population in the history of humans and we're far, far beyond the normal carrying capacity of I suppose, any primate similar to ourselves. I mean, to put this in context, one biologist estimated that humans are 10,000 times more common than we should be according to the rules of the animal kingdom. So basically, we are obviously a very skillful, very resourceful species, and we've managed to sequester many of the resources of the planet and bring them to benefit ourselves, our species. So this 8 billion, if you like, from a human point of view, is obviously a good news story. It means we've been extraordinarily successful. The question, of course, is at what price to, I suppose, both to the rest of nature and also to our planetary support systems. But I think it's equally important to say It probably 50 years ago, Pat, I'd say it was considered that the big driver for biodiversity loss and climate breakdown was population increase. These days, the focus has actually switched to consumption. And let me give you some numbers on that. It's reckoned that the carbon emissions of the richest 1%, which would be maybe about 75-80 million people, they are more than double the total emissions of the poorest 4 billion humans. That's according to research from the Stockholm Environmental Institute. So what that tells us is the way we in the West live, that is the primary driver of climate breakdown and of biodiversity loss.
All right. So you're saying that if those in the third world have lots of children, it doesn't have the same effect as people in the developed world having a few children?
That's right, Pat. On a global level, that is the case. So people, for example, in sub-Saharan Africa, their climate impact, if you like, compared to somebody in Ireland, they're about 300 times less impactful than somebody in Ireland. Now, however, that doesn't mean that unlimited population expansion in these areas. So, for example, if we look now at the areas where population is continuing to expand quickly, this is parts of Asia and particularly sub-Saharan Africa. Unfortunately, the very areas that we're seeing with population continuing to grow quickly are also the areas with the greatest climate and ecological vulnerability. And sadly, these are also the places that various projections are showing are likely to face abandonment due to extreme temperatures over the next 2 to 3 decades.
And those people are going to head to the West for the lifestyle that the West can offer.
That is entirely right. And it's often made the point, and I think it can sometimes happen in Ireland, where we get a slightly insulated type of thinking, as if we're disconnected from what happens in other parts of the world. You can't have 100 million, 500 million, a billion climate refugees spreading out throughout the world without that massively impacting all countries. And sure, of course, these are our fellow human beings, Pat. It's important to say these are not just, these are not just others. These are us. And if I might say as well, it's really important to say that if at the moment we're expanding our global population at the rate of about 80 million people a year, now that's the equivalent roughly of the population of Germany. Now, it has been calculated, Pat, that if we simply provided girls and women with access to education, contraception, and delaying the age of first pregnancy, that alone, simply meeting the unmet needs for contraception worldwide, would in fact mean that about 70 to 80 million fewer births would occur a year. So we would, with that access, we would naturally, and that, by the way, is without any coercion whatsoever. And as you well know, we've had instances in the past of forced sterilization, of one-child policies, which can be very, very cruel. The point really here is that you can actually achieve your population goals not through coercion, but rather through education and through enablement.
There's one figure that you quoted there from some ecologist saying that we are represented on the planet by 10,000 times more than we should be.
That's right. And if I can break that down,
that would give us the planet Earth would only have 800,000 people on it.
That's correct.
Less than the population of Dublin.
Precisely.
On the whole world.
in the whole world. If you kind of roll the ecological clock back to, and we were another primate, right? That is what was considered to be the carrying capacity of an apex predator primate like ourselves. Now, to put that in context, Pat, it's reckoned that about 500,000 human babies are born every day. Fair enough. Okay. That is greater than the total number of all the great apes alive in the world today. Now, that tells you that our success, it's unquestionable. It is extraordinary. It's unique. However, it has been at the cost of the rest of nature. And obviously as well, our impacts have been hugely magnified by the fact that 8 billion humans, we've also got well over 100 billion livestock, Pat, because obviously of our taste for meat and other animal products. Our 100 billion livestock is like the equivalent, not of 8 billion humans, in terms of impacts on the planet. It's more like the equivalent of about 40 billion humans. So our addiction, if you like, to animal products has hugely magnified our impacts on the planet. And it's one of the things that's been observed time again. Yep.
Right. I'll come back to you on solutions in a moment or two to stop the galloping population of the planet. Deirdre, you know, we're marking a day when it is projected that around now the 8 billionth person will be born. What do you say about our future? What do we need to do?
So the year I was born, the population of Ireland was 2.8 million. So currently we're over 5 million. So what can we do? We can educate ourselves. The biggest thing that we can do as an individual to reduce the heat on the planet is choosing smaller families. So the child dependency in this country is a huge expense. You don't have the liberty to enjoy your time. You have the obligation to have this human with you for the rest of your life as well. So in the economy that we're traditionally looking at, a linear economy, we have to refocus to degrowth economy, and that includes our population.
Okay.
So in a degrowth economy,
that just means
we can focus on wellness.
Yeah, you talk about the 2.8 million population of Ireland. We may have been depopulating ourselves, but we were populating other parts of the globe. So we don't get a free pass on that one. Emigration was rampant.
Absolutely. And it's mainly Irish women that have emigrated throughout the centuries rather than men. We have a higher percentage of Irish women. So by educating those women and giving them the courage and opportunity to go to college by having less children, they can have better jobs to support the families they do bring into the world.
Isn't it the case, though, that the birth rate has been falling? Now, things get distorted when you have a lot of immigrant populations coming in who haven't reached the standard of education that seems to lead to smaller families. Isn't that kind of a truism now, that as people get more and more educated, as the women particularly get more and more educated, they have fewer children? So
Absolutely.
If you have populations entering this country and other developed countries who have not achieved that standard of education, they are still likely to have large families.
So it boils down to the education of women and men into the situation of what is responsible use of your genitalia, of living within your limits. And when they're in the situation that they've less children, they can go to school, they can be educated, they can reach this information for themselves and educate their subsequent families and sisters. So in terms of reduced population, then you have reduced poverty, reduced child mortality. That's a great sadness when you lose a child, regardless of what country you're in. So in terms of higher education, then we can have access to free, responsible family planning. And this is down to the policymakers. So how can the policymakers actually have a well-being economy where we focus not on a growth of population and consumption of goods, but can we protect our communities, empower our communities, educate people in a solidarity economy? So again, an awareness shift locally on our consumption of the planet. And if you look alone, you mentioned people arriving to the country today. Just think of your head and the climate that we're having outside our window today, this heat, and picture yourself on a beach next summer. What kind of population is also going to be sitting on that beach in this heat? So essentially, in terms of what we're doing, we're in a crisis point. The IPCC, Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, link GDP growth and population growth as the two biggest drivers of emission in this world. So if we focus on both, if focus on a degrowth economy, reducing our population size ourselves and minding the ones that we have. So our policymakers coming back to actually have a solidarity influence addressing our climate collapse, addressing the ecological collapse and societal collapse, because we're all consuming so much of this planet.
Now, Deirdre, it kind of applies in a way to our energy consumption as well. We are a small player, even though, as John will no doubt point out, we are per capita quite a high consumer of energy. But you might argue that in 20 years, if it's not too late, we will be more and more dependent on a bit of solar, certainly a lot of wind, and we may convert that to hydrogen or other things. So we're heading down the right road in that regard. So suppose we limit our population so we just about reproduce ourselves, but while the rest of the world keeps, you know, multiplying at an incredible rate of knots, is what Ireland does here in terms of population control going to make a blind bit of difference?
So the last exchange I set up was the UK Power Trading Exchange. So while we're a small player, we have a massive size around our country to implement wind power, renewable power, if it's supported correctly. And Ireland is making great measures for community power. So should we choose community power?
But I understand all of that. I'd love to have a windmill in the back garden, and I intend to put solar panels on when I can. All of those things will be great, and we'll have offshore wind. We will have a surplus of energy which we will export. We will import then when the we are becalmed. But we should be positive in that particular equation. But if we're doing all the things that the right things, if the rest of the world does not do the right things, does it make much difference because we are so small?
The smallest actions make a difference, multiplied by every population. We can't turn a blind eye because China is not doing their job. We've seen the statistics this week from COP27. Ireland is not pulling our weight. So by reducing our acceleration of change...
You mentioned China there, and China is still a delinquent in terms of its consumption of fossil fuels. But don't forget, China did... perhaps bravely introduce a one-child policy. It led to the abortion of female children. They are concerned about, obviously, social unrest if you've got a largely male population with fewer females. And they backed off that policy somewhat. So sometimes, you know, the obvious solution, the big player taking action like that, can have unfortunate consequences.
Which is why we have to listen to the science and do life cycle analysis before we put policies in place, because we put displaced policies in place before this. Absolutely, I do not support a one-child family, but if we can adjust our own population size logically, it's also the eco-anxiety of couples. I spoke to a psychologist on Sunday, and people have this anxiety about resources. Can they provide for themselves, their families, their extended families? And it boils down to all the people that you're financially responsible for as well as emotionally responsible for it. So our anxiety is something that we have to measure. And one of those measurements is actually to look at the population that we're bringing into the world that we have to support. So if China is doing one thing, we can't let ourselves on the hook, off the hook, because somebody else is big, being bad or worse than we are. We have to address the changes we can personally make. And one of those choices is to reduce your own family and be a good parent to others. So if you're an aunt, be an excellent aunt. If you're a godmother, be an excellent godmother. But we can't let ourselves on the hook just because China is doing something else.
So I mean, I know you don't want compulsion, but I mean, people who will go to the ends of the earth in terms of medical treatments, IVF or surrogacy, and we're introducing a surrogacy bill today or a law today. Would you say to people who can't have children, don't? Don't
Absolutely
try.
Not. It's very tragic if you want to have a child and you have the capacity taken from you for whatever reason. Absolutely, that is not my point. My point is reduce the population that you intend, and with conscious consumption of everything, including your own sexual behaviour, be responsible for the children you do bring into the world.
I'll go back to you, John, finally then. Remedies that you would suggest that, you know, are not... extreme, that are doable and also socially acceptable?
Yeah, I think, Pat, the most important thing here is to avoid compulsion. It has been tried in the past and it has always ended badly. Humans, we don't respond very well to being compelled and being forced to do things. So, I mean, if you look at Ireland, I mean, we've undergone a dramatic demographic transition ourselves here. Many people, myself included, are from very large families. And that's only one generation back, yet our families are much, much smaller. So that demographic transition happened when the cultural signals changed, when the social and religious attitudes, say, to contraception, when they relaxed. And that meant that we were able to make that demographic transition away from high birth rates. It also meant, of course, that we have more resources to focus on the children that we do have. And this is an important point in the developing world as well, that if you like, the cultural and religious norms around large populations, some of them are well-founded, because particularly people in agricultural areas where additional children are related to extra labour on the farm. But what they found really is that there really is a point of diminishing returns with that. And people, in many cases, they want to be able to have the children that they want to have. So I think the key thing here really is to facilitate people in having the family sizes that they desire. And there will be parts of the world, we know that 60% part of the world right now, countries in the world, have reached, if you like, zero population growth or even slight population decline. So the continued population growth is very much focused in certain parts of the world. And I think we need to focus our efforts to help them to accelerate that demographic transition, but done in a way that is not that avoids compulsion and that supports them on that transition.
Yeah, one of the issues, I suppose, was that in poorer parts of the world where there was no healthcare, where disease was regular and often rampant, that people had many children in the hope that some would survive. In a modern era where even if the native health system can't support the medical care that people need, often from the developed world, you have the aid agencies coming in and saving lives that in another era would have been lost. So there, I suppose an adjustment is needed. You know, you have to generate the confidence that the three children I have will probably live to adulthood and will thrive and will get an education, rather than the 10 I might have had and who may have perished in a previous era from diphtheria or typhoid or one of those things. Big questions, but John Gibbons, environmental journalist, and Deirdre Lane, founder of Shamrock Spring, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.